Welcome to another episode of Stepping Into Truth, the podcast where we have conversations on race, gender, and social justice. I'm your host, Omkari Williams, and I am so glad you're here with me today. Change starts with story. As we tackle the biggest challenges to a just world, we unite through shared stories that lead us to shared action. And today, my guest is someone whose career deals with one of the issues we're currently grappling with: how to make our workplaces more diverse and more inclusive. Tommy Paris is a millennial in corporate America who wants more from the traditional 9-to-5 work experience and believes that you do too. By connecting employees' hearts and minds to business objectives through the values of diversity and inclusion, her goal is to create a place where every employee feels valued for who they are and the evolving talents they bring to the business. With experience in employee communications, culture, and engagement initiatives, Tommy enjoys creating workplace experiences that reinforce workplace diversity is an asset to the business, that honors the fact of the richness of our collective histories, and inspires us to be better together by exploring and applying principles of workplace inclusion. And I am delighted to welcome Tommy to the podcast. Hey, how are you?
Doing great.
Yay. How are you? I am really well. So let's just get to it. Let me start this conversation by having you define our terms, because sometimes people, I think, get a little confused by the words diversity and inclusion. Can you tell us what specifically those words mean for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, diversity simply points to all of the various aspects of who we are, ultimately what we bring into the room when we walk through the door, right? So that includes our race, gender, things that you can see, our ability status, maybe things that you cannot see. It also encompasses our life experiences, the places we've gone, the places that we've seen, right, in our interactions with other people. And what I think is so special about how we define diversity, or at least our approach to diversity, is that we believe that diversity is a valued asset to our business. As it relates to inclusion, we believe that inclusion are the intentional actions that you and I can take each and every day that really brings value to our business and leverages the diversity that exists among us. And so when we talk about inclusion, really it's the action behind the words, and the diversity is simply the words themselves, right? The ways in which we're all different.
That is such a fabulous definition of those two words, because it is really clear. And the thing I probably love the most is that it makes inclusion an actionable thing. And that means it's something we do, not just something we observe or understand. It requires us to participate. And that, to me, is the most important thing that we're struggling with right now, is how do we bring those values into our day-to-day life? How do we actually take action upon our understanding of what it means to include people from diverse backgrounds, not just have them at the table, but have their input really mean something? So let me ask you this. So what are the biggest challenges that you face in getting people to actually live those values of diversity and more specifically inclusion in their company?
Yeah, I would say that one of the biggest challenges, Omkari, is the simple fact that we are human beings, right? Mm-hmm. And when we're human beings at work, it is extremely difficult to get us to do something that's outside of our comfort zone, right? To do something that stretches us just a bit. The one thing that I would point to potentially several things as it relates to the challenges of really kind of moving the culture. I would point to really a couple things. Number one is getting folks bought into the idea that doing something over and above our normal walk and talk, if you will, what we're comfortable with, will help us move the ball down the field, will help us achieve higher and better results than what we're already achieving. And number two I point to some of the things that are happening in our society today. I think that there's a lot of unrest. There's some discourse that might be troubling. And that has, I think, created a dynamic between us as human beings that makes it difficult for us to connect on a real level.
I'm going to interrupt you because I would like you to just, before you move on, speak more about that, what you just said, that difficulty of us connecting on a human level.
Yeah. So I think, for example, you know, take social media, for example. You know, the way we use social media right now, I think the intended purpose is powerful. And there are a lot of really, really good things that result in leveraging technology and using social media effectively, right? It allows us to connect with people, stay connected with folks who might, you know, move far away. And it helps us to exchange, you know, with folks who might have different ideas. However, what social media also allows us to do is do what we do naturally, which is form in-groups and out-groups, right? And huddle around people who think like us, who look like us, who see the world that we, in the way that we see it too. And that maybe allows for, you know, difficulty in exchanging ideas in a very civil manner, right? It's kind of easy to say something that maybe has a bit of an edge to it when I'm sitting behind the screen of my mobile device, my iPad or my computer, right? And so I think that disconnection in and of itself, the fact that we're interacting with technology and not a person when we're exchanging ideas, maybe that are different from perhaps what we agree with, that alone, I think, creates some dynamic that when we come into the workplace and perhaps we're forced to interact more and more between people, you know, and looking them square in the face, eye to eye. Yeah. I think we've somehow lost the ability to really be able to connect more civilly and disagree, but yet not be disagreeable.
It's very timely that you said that because I was on social media earlier today. And I saw a post where two gentlemen I know were on opposite sides of an issue. And one of them, the one who initiated this whole thread, was really disparaging towards people who didn't agree with his particular point of view. And the other gentleman I know, sort of who's on the other side of that issue, pushed back. And my feeling was, this is just sad. You know, we cannot have a conversation. These two guys know each other. They're Facebook friends. They live in the same community. And it was so hostile. And I just said, you know, I think this is sad that we are not able to have a conversation without this kind of nastiness. And I was very measured and I didn't even put it that harshly. And the guy who wrote the initial post basically just blew me off saying, let me grab some tissues. And I was so shocked because I know him. He's a nice man. And I was just horrified because he would never, ever say that to my face. He would never say that to my face. He and I could sit down and have a disagreement over a drink and it would be, this is what I think, this is what you think, here's where we disagree, here's where we agree. But somehow that filter allowed him to be rude to me in a way that I really don't believe he would have been rude in person. And that is a big problem.
I think so too, Amkari. And, you know, your story that you just shared, I would imagine that many of us have had very similar experiences. I know I have. And at the end of the day, you've hit the nail on the head when you suggest that when we are looking each other eye to eye and when we're in each other's presence, there's a forced ability for us to connect with our other person's humanity that, you know, interacting with a screen or a computer doesn't afford us. And
exactly.
So that's why I think that's why I think that the workplace is really a powerful place for us to really start to initiate change. Because everywhere else, we tend to huddle with people that think like us and see the world in the way that we see it, right? When we go home, maybe, when we go to our places of worship, if we worship, when we, you know, interact with our friends and go out and hang out and have fun. Usually, you know, those are circles that we're used to and that we're comfortable in. And we typically, you know, agree in those circles. And so I'm really interested and excited about being able to really create a place of change in the workplace, because I think that's the best place to start these conversations and really equip people with the strategies to be able to have difficult conversations in a way that bonds our relationships and brings us closer together.
I have to tell you, because I work from home, I am currently sitting in my studio, which is my closet.
That's pretty cool.
Right? It's the best sound quality. But I don't have that opportunity. I don't have a workplace that I go to where I have to interact with other people. So I hadn't thought about what you're saying. But as I'm listening to you, I think, yeah, that is so true. I remember back to the days when I did have an office job. And yeah, I was forced to get along with people whom I wouldn't have chosen to be friends with. I just, you know, they wouldn't have been in my social circle, but we actually got quite chummy. And it was that environment which made us step outside of our little tiny tribes into a larger tribe and exchange information and find out more about one another than we would have probably in any other circumstance. So I'm loving where you're taking me as you talk about this, because as I say, I really had not thought about that because I haven't worked in that kind of environment in such a long time. With that shifting workplace environment, are there some successes that you've had in creating that environment that you're particularly proud of?
Absolutely. You know, one of the successes that comes to mind, you know, actually occurred recently. You know, me personally, I'm a huge fan of TED Talks, and I, you know, will put on a TED Talk, you know, a few times a week, right, to just think through, you know, ideas and hear what people have to say and hear people's perspectives on a variety of topics. And so within our workplace, we've actually adopted the idea of a TED Talk. And no, we stole it. And we call them D&I Talks, right? And we're super lucky because with our D&I Talks, our senior leaders have bought into it really, you know, from the onset. And anytime that we go to a senior leader and ask them, hey, you want to do a D&I talk? They're like, sure, absolutely. I'd love to share a perspective on workplace inclusion. And they do such a good job tapping into who they are, their personal stories, and tying it to what it means for us as a business and our success of our people. And at one of our recent talks, one of our senior leaders who actually came from our Chicago area, our Illinois market, she did a phenomenal job of touching on the inspirations in her life that have helped shape her leadership style and how she's become such the inclusive leader that she's become. And she pointed to her parents who served and I think actually still serve as Sunday school teachers in their church. And, you know, being able to hear that senior leader's story and connect it to her spiritual life and the relationship with her parents actually moved one of our employees in the audience. And when we had our open dialogue Q&A session, that employee, she was very vulnerable and she opened up and indicated that she was so happy to hear a senior leader talk about her path of spirituality and what that means to her as an inclusive leader. And that person connected in a way that she hasn't connected before. And she was able to realize the value of her spirituality and how she could bring value in cultivating powerful, inclusive relationships with other people through the values of her spiritual path. And so that was powerful because, you know, in our workplaces, we tend to, you know, some topics tend to be taboo, right? Mm-hmm. Let's face it, the way we use certain topics, right, they tend to drive wedges. But in this particular regard, it was a unifying moment. And it was a moment that I was particularly proud of because it really started to break down barriers as it relates to who you can be and how you can show up as fully to engage not only yourselves, but other people to be their best.
Yeah, that's That's very cool. And you said something that particularly struck me, which was that the woman in the audience was vulnerable. And I think that that's actually a really big part of inclusivity, is a willingness to be vulnerable and let other people in, let their experiences in, so that we are informed by their experience, that we sort of are willing to drop our preconceptions about who they are or what they do or what they want or what they're going to think, and just be willing to sit there and be open to the reality of who they are, not the thing we've made up in our head. And that is when we actually accomplish that, that inclusion sort of, to me, I would imagine, evolves out of that, because we're letting ourselves be informed by someone else's experience rather than just an intellectual construct that we've built in our heads.
Absolutely. And you know, that is absolutely the case. And for us, we look to build on those moments of momentum, because to your point, you know, the intellectual concepts are fine, but those are just the entry points to the conversations. It's our ability to create the space and open that space and maintain that space whenever we have, you know, a session, whether it be that D&I talk or a lunch and learn or a small group roundtable discussion, you know, whatever that is, you know, being able to create and maintain that space usually does require that vulnerability that I'm super excited our senior leaders have been able to model, and I'm hoping that we continue to cascade that throughout the organization.
Yeah, that is such a lovely way to phrase it, to cascade that, because just that image of that sort of like a waterfall just cascading down all the way throughout the organization and then spreading out to the people who are at different points on that hierarchical ladder of your organization, so that everyone is touched by it, no matter where they fall in the organizational strata. And I think that when you talk about opening up in that way, what I am most touched by is that this is something that doesn't only work in the workplace, but expands outside of the workplace. That I can't help but think that people who learn to do this at work take that wisdom out into the world, and that makes them more open to experiences than they might otherwise be.
Absolutely. You know, that reminds me of a quote, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything, right? And so, you know, as we continue to create spaces where our leaders, our employees can practice, you know, different ways of being that are more inclusive, that might run counter to our natural tendencies, right? That might run natural or might run counter to what we've been taught maybe a good leader is, or what a good employee might be and how they might show up as we continue that, our hope, yes, is that, you know, once you know, sign out, you know, to go about your day, that you don't forget that. You don't forget the positive, you know, principles that we learn inside the organization, that we continue to practice that. Because, you know, one thing that I personally don't believe is that we can just turn on and off who we are. You know, how we do anything really is how we do everything. And if I'm a jerk at home, I'm probably going to be a jerk at work, right? And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think that we do the best job we can of just hiring great people. You know, and for the most part, I think that we do a really, really nice job of that. There are always going to be apples here and there, right? But at the most basic level, I think that we have a lot of good people on our teams, and I'm super excited to be a part of that.
Since you just said that quote, which is one of my favorites as well, how you do anything is how you do everything, how have these values of diversity and inclusion shown up in your own life?
Gosh, wow. You know, There are three really good examples I can point to, Amkari. And obviously they all point to personal relationships in my life. I have a significant other. I have a girlfriend who is very special to me. And, we're fairly young in our relationship, relatively speaking, I guess. We've been together for 2 years, and it's been a great journey so far, and I'm looking forward to where it takes us in the future. We have a lot of similarities, and we have some differences. I'm not going to lie. And
join the rest of the united world.
We're not special in that way, right? We all have those areas in our relationships that maybe create some tension. But I have been able to call on the principles of inclusion that I've learned, for example, reflective listening and active listening. I've been able, to call on the fact that, I am being judgmental in certain situations simply because, how she chooses to process the world might be different from the way I choose to process the world. And, why am I placing value on that when it's simply just a difference, right? Mm-hmm. Challenging myself when I am, when I moved, for example, to make her wrong just because of how she is and how she processes the world, right? Those are some things that I see showing up in my day-to-day life on a daily basis, and I'm glad to be able to point to, some things that I've learned as an inclusion professional to be able to make my relationships on a personal level more successful.
Yeah, that is a really good point because it is so true, and I don't think we often think about it, but our relationships are sort of the foundational place of inclusivity in a way. How willing are we to let our families, our partners, our friends be who they are and not who we think they should be has a lot to do with whether we're willing to include a different point of view in how we see the world. We may not agree with it, but we can at least honor it as valid for that person who holds it, as the same way we want them to honor our opinions as valid for us. And just expanding our idea of what it means to be inclusive, and that when we expand that idea rather than constrict it down into our tribes, we are actually building bridges between us and other people, rather than burning bridges between us and other people.
Absolutely. That is absolutely spot on. I think about, for example, this idea about, the difference between, introverts and extroverts. Mm-hmm. For example, I myself identify as an introvert, maybe an ambivert on some days, but really I derive my energy from being alone, being able to process, whereas I have other folks, who I work alongside who are extroverts. And sometimes my tendency might be to say, gosh, they're talking too much, or gosh, I just want to be alone, and maybe see that not as a value add, but not only being able to honor them for who they are, but then being able to say, okay, what is it that I can actually glean that's of value from their difference, right? Being able to take that one step further, not just to honor them, but then to say, what can I leverage from how you show up in the world to help us be successful? And that, I think, is another step in being able to not only honor people and who they are and how they show up in the world, but then also to really proactively put us in a place to say, then how can I leverage that in order to be successful within our team? So, for example, the extroverts on my team, I actually channel their energy, and to be able to use that whenever we are, whenever we're out and engaging with other people, they actually help boost my energy to be able to engage and connect with other people. So I've actually been inspired by the extroverts that I work with because of who they are and how they show up.
That's fantastic. And it goes back to what you were saying about inclusion being something we do. So even though what you're talking about here now is inclusion in terms of different energy dynamics, that it's something that you've recognized can actually be of benefit to you rather than just an irritant to you is really very cool. And that actually is something I'm going to take with me as well, because I also am an introvert and I can find it really draining to be around large groups. And when I let myself sort of shift into that feeding off of the energy of that group and letting it lift me up, then I'm in a much better place. But that's not my natural go-to place. And I'm sure that on the other side of the spectrum, people who are extroverts sometimes find our more introverted energy allows them to just sort of relax and do nothing for a bit and find that restorative as well. So I hadn't thought of it that way, but that idea of leveraging the differences between us in the nicest sense of leveraging, not in the sense of using somebody, but in the sense of recognizing what benefit there is for both people in an interaction. That's very cool. I like that. Thank you. That's very cool.
Yeah, right on. And you know, Omkari, that's one thing I wanted to elevate just really quickly, is the way we approach inclusion ultimately is for the benefit of the collective, right? And I'm glad that you drew that distinction between, you know, using, right, and then leveraging, because that is a very clear distinction that needs to be made. Ultimately, every time that we, you know, approach, you know, something of value, we want it to be, you know, consumed in the best possible way. And that is really for the benefit of everybody. So,
yeah, great point. Yeah. I do think sometimes we sort of will use a word and we won't always realize that even though it's come to have a negative connotation, it didn't always mean that, or it didn't start out that way. And I like to, when I can, reclaim some of those words so that a word like leverage doesn't mean someone sucking someone else dry, you know?
That's right.
And that it That's actually, right. And if you think, and you know, that I think of more as level, you know, that it shares a root with the word level, and sort of, so both people are getting something out of it. I think of it sort of as a seesaw, and it goes up and it comes down and both people ultimately benefit. That's how I envision that word when I hear that word. So this is a time when these conversations of inclusion are so important. As we're recording this interview, we here in the United States are in the midst of an intense fight around immigration. And it's playing out all over the news. You literally cannot turn on the news or open a newspaper and not see something about what's happening at the southern border of the United States. And it seems like where we are right now is in this sort of, we are trying to figure out who we are as a country. And I always remind myself, the United States is a very young country, relatively speaking. We're not even 300 years old. There are countries that have been around for thousands of years, you know, 1,000 years. And that as we navigate this, we are literally looking at how are we going to include people in our society? Where is it appropriate? Is it appropriate to exclude people? And all of these conversations that are happening. And I just am fascinated by the conversation about what inclusion looks like in the larger context of not just a business, but a society, and how we use inclusion and diversity in our societies. And is that ultimately a strength, or is it ultimately a source of vulnerability in a bad way? And I'd love to get your take on how inclusion can be used in a broader societal way.
Yeah, man, what a big question
that is. I know, I put you on the spot there.
You know what, you know, I'll definitely sit and simmer in it and play in that spot, because I think that that's a spot that we all need to be thinking about right now, because, you know, we're all citizens of our community and our societies. And at the end of the day, you know, we all have a stake in the game, or at least we should. You know, when I think about inclusion and what that means in the larger society, and really what is at the heart of, you know, some of this damaging discourse that's taking place. And, you know, I think about the fact that, you know, while I do understand that there are a variety of political perspectives out there, you know, at the end of the day, we're really, you know, there's a big tension point between the right and the left. And, you know, when I think about the principles of the left, and I think about the principles of the right, I think about the fact that we are, I think, heading down this road of either or. And that, I think, is the danger of a dichotomous approach to perspectives, right? Just taking it's either my way or the highway, right?
Yes.
To looking at things from the liberal perspective only, and thinking that that's our only way out, or taking things from a more conservative perspective and thinking that's our only way that we're going to get things done. You know, and the inclusion aspect comes into play regarding the fact that we can actually leverage the strengths of both. And I think that that's actually the intention of our founding, founding fathers, is that we had these ideas that were quite lofty, and the fact that we can all come together to try to create space where the best of these ideas could work for the benefit of all. And I do mean all, although beforehand, 100 and so years ago, perhaps they did not consider all to
right.
really be all. At the end of the day, I think that that's really where they were headed. And so I think their intentions were in the right place. I think fast forward to today, I don't see us really leveraging the best of both perspectives or all perspectives to be able to create policy and to create, institutions for that can execute against the policies that really reflect the best of all perspectives. So, you know, I in no way in what I just said is going to be the secret sauce, right? The silver bullet to help us to advance, you know, our societal goals in a way that's going to be, that's going to create an America for everybody to live and thrive in. But I do think that if we continue to sit in the space of dialogue that is unproductive, and suggests that my way, is the only way,
mm-hmm.
that history will continue to repeat itself. And, you know, I am not a historian by any stretch of the imagination, but I am a scholar in some regards, meaning I read and I'm interested in, you know, the thoughts and ideas that have been shared before us. And, you know, looking at the events of today, they look eerily similar to events of yesterday. And that is something that does concern me a great deal.
Me as well. And I'm going to disagree with you when you say, I mean, yes, okay, I will agree you do not have the secret sauce, but I will disagree because I actually do think that your perspective is incredibly important, as are all the perspectives, because we can't do anything about this alone. Not one person is going to fix this problem. We need one person joined by another person and another person and another person, and having that exponentially expand out. And then I actually think the problems get addressed. So I think that you are as important and powerful in this as I am, and the people next door to me and down the street, that we actually have as citizens to stand up and take a more active role in our government. And this is something that we've kind of gotten out of the habit of. And perhaps what's happening now is a reexamination of the role of the active citizen. And these conversations on diversity and on inclusion and on social justice are bringing active citizenry back into a common conversation. And that feels incredibly important to me, because I think we had just gotten lazy.
Absolutely. Right on. And, you know, Omkari, if I could point to one thing that I would like to challenge myself and others who might be willing to be active participants, as you kind of noted there, you know, if I could challenge us to do one thing or to think about one thing, it would be this. If we could release our right to be right, you know, from moment to moment, you know, whether it's, you know, we're in an argument with a spouse, partner, whether we are exchanging ideas and we're sitting on different sides of a table, you know, with someone at work, maybe we're having a disagreement. Maybe that disagreement is over where we're going to go for lunch. Maybe that disagreement is over which supplier we're going to go with and award this contract to. Maybe it's over a big multi-million dollar transaction that our company is potentially looking at. Maybe it's over some way bigger, you know, issues than that. You know, what if we thought to ourselves, what if we were open enough to just say, you know what, I release my right to be right in this moment. What if I'm wrong? Could that create space and openness for someone else to just plant a seed, for us to just consider something a little bit different than what we see ourselves? I just wonder if we were more open to seeing things more broadly and differently, would we change the course that we're on right now? I don't know.
I think that's an excellent point. And I think that we don't even necessarily need to release our need to be right as much as, because we can be right for us. We need to, I think we need to expand our willingness to let someone else also be right. And to believe that there is more than one way that, I mean, yes, okay, I know, I'm amazing, I'm fabulous, but maybe my way isn't always the right way. Hard to say those words, but you know, it's possibly true. Unlikely, but it's possibly true. You know, if we could just get there, if we could just get to that place of, all right, you know, this is what I believe this really strongly, but is it actually worth fighting over? Is their idea so bad that this is worth fighting over? Or is it just not my idea? Is it just different from my idea? And because if we can have that mental thing happen, then we also are more willing to accept that our ideas are fine for us and that their ideas have as much validity for them. We are more willing to be generous with other people about their ideas when we realize that it's just an opinion. You know, I mean, most of the time it is not a life or death matter, and we will get incredibly stuck in our rightness. And when we look back, often we think, what was I arguing about? I mean, really, that was just not worth the time and the energy and the emotional upset. But we can just get sort of ratcheted up really quickly. So I think that there's a lot to what you said there, and letting go of that need to be right is, it's not easy, but it's incredibly freeing. I mean, when you actually do it and you go, oh, you know what? That's okay. We can do it their way this time. That's fine. There's this sense of relief that happens. It's kind of like if you've been holding your fists really, really tightly, and then you just relax your hands and you go, oh gosh, that feels so much better. It's kind of like that. We don't have to hold on so tight to everything. I'm not sure where we started holding on so tightly, but there's a generosity in being willing to let someone else just take the floor for a moment.
Yeah, man. You know what? That was a great visual, and I felt it viscerally even, you know, just that simple release. And not to say that you and I, we can't, you know, hold on to have convictions and hold them to be dear, by all means. We should believe in something, right?
Absolutely.
Dr. Martin Luther King definitely suggested that we definitely need to believe for something, or else we'll fall for anything. You know, and there is power in allowing someone to change us. Not maybe not, you know, 180, but maybe even just a little bit, just to enter our thoughts just a little bit from a different perspective, to really kind of allow us to expand. You know, I was inspired by, you know, some material I'm reading from Howard Ross. He actually has a new book out, and you know, I'm somewhat of a student of Howard Ross. He's a leading diversity and inclusion professional. I've been doing this work for decades, right? Probably longer than I've been alive. You know,
you're very young. That wouldn't be hard.
Well, not that young, but you know, I deeply respect his work, and in his work, he elevated a point that I think is spot on, Omkari. You know, he suggests that, you know, ideas are no longer our ideas; they're part of our identity now, right? And that unfortunately we've shifted from having a point of view, from really assigning, you know, the thoughts and ideas to someone and that being who they are, right? So we've gone from, I don't like what you said, to I don't like you, because we associate people with their ideas, and it's become extremely personal. And then on the flip side of that, then my ideas must be a reflection of who I am, and it actually must be who I am. And when at the end of the day, they're just a perspective.
Yeah.
Perspective.
And we change our minds all the time. We do not believe the same things at 30 that we believed at 10 as a general rule. I, you know, at some point I gave up believing in the tooth fairy. I let it go. It was painful, but I did it. And that's just life. You know, you recognize that something you believed simply doesn't fit you anymore. It doesn't sit right in you anymore. It's not that it was bad. It's not that it was wrong. You've just grown past it. And
wait, what do you mean? The tooth fairy isn't real?
Oh, golly. I have got to stop disabusing people of that thing. I will never say that again, because yeah, I know I get in trouble every time I tell people that. They are always, yeah, they always have your response. But yeah, I just think that there's this thing we do where we feel like we do have to hold on to an idea so tightly, and that if we let go of that idea, somehow we're being not dishonest. What's the word I'm looking for? We're being disloyal to our own identity. Mm-hmm. And that isn't the case. Ideas are literally just that. They are intellectual constructs. And to attach ideas to a person's character means that if you don't like one idea and that is their character, then there's really no space for you to welcome them into your life in any way, shape, or form. You have shut the door and locked it. And that, I think, is part of where we are right now, is that if we disagree with someone on one pivotal issue, we will just write them off. That way is leading to exactly what we see right now. So I am a big proponent of having conversations where we get to share stories from our own experiences, so that we get to find out that the people who seem so different than we are actually not that different than we are, that we share experiences, and that we share dreams, and that we share disappointments. Of course, they're all going to look a little different, but the fundamental experience is the human experience. And that is where we can come together. And it's in that place, I believe, that we can start to work out the differences we have around policies and points of views without the vitriol that we're currently just swimming in.
Yeah, I believe that too.
Yeah, because it's tough out there right now. I mean, it feels intense. So our time is coming to an end, and I want to ask you what your vision is for the work you're doing for 10 years from now. So it's 10 years from today, and you're looking back. What would you like to have accomplished in those 10 years?
10 years from now, gosh, I would love for each and every one of us to be able to really operate from our highest frequency, to be able to really be in the flow, and to be able to really rock it out as human beings. I mean, like we've got so much potential and we have so much to give. I listen to, my colleagues, my friends, I'm interacting with my family, my loved ones. And there are some moments I have when I'm like, you know what? We haven't even scratched the surface into who we are and what we have to give. Our contributions are, I think, just waiting kind of in the wings. I mean, we've had moments of greatness here and there. But I would love for us to just be able to just operate in the flow together. And, I don't know that that's going to be something we're able to do in 10 years from now. But moment by moment maybe can get us there. I don't know. But I would love for us to just be able to really just be excited about who we are and the things that we do each and every day. And I don't know if there are a lot of people that go home really fulfilled. I don't know that to be true. But it would be really awesome if we did. And, given the fact that millions of Americans are, waking up each and every day, going to work, clocking in, giving all they can to, companies, organizations, corporations around the globe, only to maybe go home and be burnt out, be unfulfilled, and then that be what shows up to their spouses, their kids, and that's who they bring to their families. I just feel like it could be different. And I would love for us to have our workplaces be a place of recharge and rejuvenation. So that when we do go home, we're actually excited to continue to engage and interact with people and to give them our love and our best. So, what if our workplaces were a place of recharge and rejuvenation, not a place that sucked us dry and, we spit us out to our companies or our families, to be bad energy, right? I would just love for us to be able to really kind of shift the way we use our energy in service for our organizational goals. That would be really cool.
Wow, that's amazing. I agree. It's probably not a goal we'll see in 10 years, but I also think that the only way we ever get anywhere is to just keep moving towards that place. And again, it's about building out that vision, from you to me and from me to the people who listen to this podcast and from them to the people in their lives. And that with intention, we will get there. It may take a while, but we will get there. And that's beautiful. And that's a perfect way to end this conversation. I want to thank you, Tommy, so much. This has been a tremendous amount of fun for me, and I'm really delighted that you were able to take the time to have this conversation with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure, and I hope we get to do it again.
I think we will. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining me for this episode of Stepping Into Truth, the podcast where we have conversations on race, gender, and social justice. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe. You'll find links to do that in the show notes. And I'll be back with another episode very soon. Till then, remember, change starts with story. So keep sharing yours. Bye.